You are listening to Friends of Europe's podcast. Don't miss our debates on global and European issues that span political, economic, social, and environmental challenges, and follow our website at friendsofeurope.org.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the third session. The moderating team is unchanged this time, Chadha and myself. And I thought that the previous two sessions have been remarkable for the frankness with which speakers dealt with what are difficult issues. In this third session, we'll be quite literally getting down to business and talking about how well companies in the Western Balkans are doing, what are the prospects for more startups. I sympathized when I heard the Bosnian foreign minister saying that in his country so many young people graduating want to go into public sector jobs. The reason I sympathize is it's a mirror of Western Europe. Most surveys of young university and college leavers suggest very much the same. One of the effects of the economic crisis, which is still not over, has been that young people's taste for adventure has been blunted, and that if they can, they aim for the safe paycheck rather than the adventure and the romance of starting up a business. However, in the Western Balkans, they don't actually have any choice because there aren't enough jobs. We know that the unemployment figures are desperate. And we know that the only way to tackle that sort of problem is by creating new businesses. So I hope we're going to be focusing on that. Chadha, if you'd like to do the honours, and then we'll get started.
Absolutely. Thank you, Giles. Welcome back, everyone. So in the second session, we talked about the challenges of regional integration, but it was interesting to note that despite the difficult obstacles and the competition, there is still a wealth of opportunity there that has to be tapped, and there's potential there to be tapped. So I think this, as you said, Giles, this session is really about getting really down to the nuts and bolts of what are the opportunities, what are the obstacles, what are people doing, businesses doing to get around them and to tap into this potential. So let me once again very briefly introduce the panelists. As I said, their longer CVs are in the conference pack. So on my right, Vladimir Kavaric, Montenegro's Minister of Economy. Thank you very much indeed for being here. To his right, Kirill Kravchenko. He's chief executive of NIS, which is a leading energy company in the Balkans and a partner for this conference as well. To Giles's left, my old friend and colleague, Tanya Fajon, who's now a member of the European Parliament and also a trustee of Friends of Europe, which is great news. Thank you, Tanya. And last but not least, Alan Peich. He's from the OECD Investment Compact for Southeast Europe and has some interesting new data to give us about what's happening in the region. So without further ado, I'm actually going to ask you, Minister, to give us a little bit of your thoughts about what is happening in the region, what are the business opportunities, and what are the obstacles or the challenges you face as you try and attract FDI from all these different countries outside who are knocking on your doors.
Thank you. Thank you. First of all, I would like to thanks to for invitation and congratulate for organizing of such a challengeable event. And Lily, I believe that this title of today's panels is addressing most important issue of our, let's say, part of the world. Regarding that, first of all, I would like to say that doing in business and making a favorable business ambient is something what has to be and what is going to be on every agenda of every government in our part of the world, or at least it should be, because in today's world and in today's circumstances on Western Balkan, I believe that the main question is question how to accelerate economic growth. From that point of view, I would like to say that, first of all, in today's global circumstances, when transaction costs are getting lower, communication costs are getting lower, transportation costs, I believe that in today's world, when everyone is seeking for investment, countries from our region should not consider each other as competitor on local market, rather as partner in facing competition on global market. And from that point of view, what we have to do is to work on something what is known as, let's say, traditional economics receipts for economic growth. Free trade, private sector driven economic growth, rule of law, and all those things which are, let's say, known from the centuries. We have to divide those things in our part of the world on, let's say, two levels. First level is on a level of, let's say, of rules which allows free trade. For example, from Montenegrin point of view, our governments for last 15 years are very committed in something what is very favorable business ambient, starting from taxation, national treatment of foreigners, macroeconomic stability, rule of law, low level of, let's say, light business regulation, and I believe the situation is more or less same or similar in all our, let's say, neighboring countries. Also, very important things, there is no any country in today's world which is self-sufficient, even if we are talking about global giant, and that is especially true and important to be understood on Balkan when we are having only let's say, small economy. And from that point of view, we in Montenegrin government, and I believe it could be done, and it is in process in all, let's say, regional governments, we are very, let's say, committed in developing network of FTAs. Today, one by investing, for example, in Montenegro, I believe that similar situation is also other countries, can, through the network of FTAs, can have access on a market of 800 million people, because we have FTA with EU, with EFTA countries, CEFTA countries, Russia, Ukraine, Turkey, and from that point of view, that is, we can say that on a level of rules, everything is more or less on a place regarding free trade in a region, and of course we are going to face fine-tuning in the future, but we are talking about main, let's say, pillar. I believe that it is on a place. A bit different situation is with infrastructure, because beside rules, we also have to have infrastructure which is allowing and which is encouraging free trade. From that point of view, I believe that we are moving. We are moving especially through the Berlin process, something what started in Berlin, continued last year in Vienna, and will be continued also next this year, I believe, in Paris. And what is probably main achievement of those gatherings is that it is fully realized that infrastructure, considering economy of scale and economic potential of every country in our region, can be done only together. And from that point of view, today when we are meeting, I'm talking about regional governments, minister of the region, we are not having other issue than how to develop infrastructure, what is also, let's say, witness of situation that right now priorities in our part of the world are, let's say, more or less the same. And now I'm not going to waste the time on, let's say, counting projects which are, let's say, right now in a place, but probably most important challenge for the period to come is how to develop common infrastructure in this part of the world, which is also going to make this part of the Europe as, let's say, integral factor also in terms of accessibility. Thank you. I believe it is more than enough for opening.
It's very good for the opening, and it stresses the point of the connectivity that was also raised in the second session, connectivity, economic and financial and infrastructure, of course. Turn to you, Mr. Kavaric. As a leading energy company, as somebody that's investing, a company that's investing across the region, give us a little flair of your personal experience about what you see as the challenges in creating a Balkans marketplace.
Thank you. I'm waiting just a timer, because it's very efficient tool to have the timer.
There you go.
Yeah, I can start. I tried to save, as a representative of business, a little bit time for the other participants. First of all, I would like to stress that we are significantly present in the Balkan region, and specifically in Western Balkan region. For the last 6 years, we have invested 3 billion euros, and this is just the beginning. We are planning to invest, despite of the oil and gas crisis, in the next 3 years, 1 billion from our sources, and additionally attract 1 billion from our partners. So we are really involved in the economical situation. Second, we are present not just in the Western Balkan region, we are present in other countries of the Balkan region, what are already the participants of EU, like Romania, Hungary, or Bulgaria, so we can compare what are the pluses and minuses, because the all things have pluses and minuses. If we will be rather shortly, I would like to stress three things for the Western Balkan region from the point of investment. First thing, this is a potential. What does it mean? It means that if you compare the Western Balkan countries with the other countries of Eastern Europe, we have gap around from 10 to 15 years. So it means that the all things what are, were developed in the last 15 years in Eastern countries, in Western Balkan countries, just beginning. So the investor has the chance to receive additional possibilities for development. Second thing, this is a perspective. Perspective, it means that for sure Balkan, Western Balkan countries will be the part of EU. And the majority of us understand that when it comes, for sure we will receive the additional benefits. That's why now we see the proper time for investments in this region. And third thing, this is a tools. I suppose, as a representative of business, that's geography, climate, human resources, what's from the point of education to price the best in the Eastern Europe, give us opportunities as an investor to receive the most proper success. But at the same time, very important that we need to identify the specific things for every country in the Western Balkan region. I give you just one example for the Serbia, because main our business concentrating in Serbia will fulfill in 15% of the budget of Serbia, and for sure we devote a lot of time to development of Serbia. What pluses of Serbia, what we see currently? First plus, for sure, it's a stability. We have political stability, we have tax stability, and for sure we have opportunity to make the long-term prognosis. Second thing, what is, I would say, strength of the Serbia, this is the openness. What does it mean? It means that no doubts that the path of Serbia to EU, at the same time, the Serbia keeps a very good relationships and free trade agreements with such countries as China, Russia, good relationship with Far East, Turkey. So I think that this is some kind of opportunity to investors to use these possibilities. Third, this is geography, because geography, it's already done, and this is in the middle of Balkan region. And for sure, all infrastructure project must come through the Serbia. I'm pretty sure that every country has own strengths, and for investors, it's very important to identify these strengths. What are opportunities? How we can accelerate the development of Western Balkan region? First, for sure, is accelerate to association to EU. Because currently, unfortunately, EU and all other bodies looks on the EU candidates not at the same size like in the EU countries. For instance, it's a different approach from the point of financing. It's a different approach from the point of considering to the sanctions to attracting the finance and all that other things. And the second direction, I suppose, what it's necessary to develop and to accelerate the development of the region is to keep this openness. I mean, that's for sure it will be part of the EU, but at the same time, it's necessary to keep the good relationship with China and other big players in the world. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You've made some very interesting points, but I'd like to come back to them a little bit later because I want to give the other panelists a chance. Tanya, having heard the minister and Mr. Caravencio, I was just wondering what are your thoughts, because you've been working on the region, you're a member of the delegation for relations with Bosnia and Herzegovina, and you meet especially young people quite a bit. And is there this risk-averse mentality among the young people that was alluded to in the by Giles, actually, and by our previous speakers as well?
Thank you, Shada. It's a challenge for me to speak about the business in the Western Balkans for several reasons, but one for sure because I'm not coming from the business sector. But knowing very well the region and closely working with it for several years, I will try to give you my view. The Western Balkan has an enormous geostrategical potential. And not only that, if you look, there are enormous nature resources, culture, tourism, many things that we could really use better. You mentioned young people. Speaking about young, we have to invest more in the youth in the Balkans. Because if we don't stop brain drain that is happening very rapidly and transform it into brain circulation and give the vision to young people to stay in the countries, then the countries will lose their future. So recently we had a conference in Slovenia discussing with a business environment about the opportunities. I'm coming from Slovenia, what we can do better, what the business sector can do better to invest in Western Balkan. One thing was for sure what everyone agreed. The potential is enormous, but we lack connectivity. We are not connected, and it's high time that we abolish the borders, not only in our heads, finally on the map as well, which certainly in the present environment, having migration crisis and all the other crises is extremely difficult to discuss. And another thing, business doesn't like to go to the environment that is not stable. That means fight against corruption, that is a common denominator for the region, that means the rule of law and many other things that need to be done and strengthened in the area. What I am supporting for a long time are two processes, Brdo and Berlin, that you both mentioned, because both processes are basically delivering concrete results, whether it comes to energy or transport, infrastructure. So it's good to build on this in the region. Brdo process, you knew, was launched by Slovenia, then followed by Croatia, and it brings together the leaders of the region through the concrete projects, especially on the projects on youth, when we are, for example, focusing ahead of the Paris conference this year. And I think this is something where we can do much more. And the Berlin process, I understand that you discussed already before. So I think the crucial is that we rebuild the trust in the region and cooperation. And once we are strong in that, and reconciliation in the region, then we can be strong partners, whether it's economic, political cooperation, or people to people. It's basically a holistic approach. We have to connect the region in the area of politics, economy, and people, and only that can bring desirable results and growth in the region. So that would be my...
One thing that was raised in the previous panel, Tanya, was also the skills gap. I mean, you talked about young people, but are they being educated, trained in the right skills for growth of the region?
I wouldn't absolutely not underestimate the skills and the knowledge of the young people on the Western Balkans. Myself, I'm often positively surprised when I see how highly educated are young people. But what we have to assure is that those who are highly educated abroad can come back as well and deliver and contribute to the societies at home. And these ways are often closed or not really open the way they should be. But for example, when I was traveling on Albania, Bosnia, wherever, you see really motivated young people. And for them is even, I have to mention, 6 years ago when we managed to deliver visa-free regime, this was something that was tangible for young students and pupils to know what we are talking about Europe, to give them opportunities to study, to exchange the experiences, and to bring knowledge. Certainly there is a big potential in the knowledge in the region, I wouldn't underestimate, but there are not jobs opportunities. And this is something that is scary. And in the environment that is not healthy for business, which I mentioned before, where even among young people sometimes I feel too much growing nationalism because of lack of vision, then this is a dangerous situation. That's why we have as well to push region as fast as possible closer to the European Union. And just on the positive note, that was a good step yesterday for Bosnia and Herzegovina that you mentioned to really deliver the application. It is a clear European perspective for the whole Western Balkan, but in the new reality.
Thank you very much. Alan, this is a very competitive world. I mean, you know, we're talking about the Western Balkans, Southeast Europe today, but, you know, if you look at Asia, you look at Latin America, you look at ascending Africa, investors have a wealth of countries they can go to. Why would they go to the Western Balkans given this vast choice? And your new study that you're going to tell us a little about, what does it say about the competitiveness of the Western Balkans?
Yeah, thank you very much. Actually, it was a very good introduction. In the previous panel, Giles asked the participants to grade themselves from 1 to 5 on the reform agenda. This is actually a similar idea we had, and we worked with the economies of the region, of the Western Balkans, with the 6 economies, and we produced this report, which is going to be published, and which is actually going to be launched next week. So this is a kind of a sneak preview of this report, which is going to be presented next week in Paris. It is called Competitiveness in Southeast Europe, a Policy Outlook. And it is a result of the work on 15 policy dimensions, which affect competitiveness in its various aspects, and has over 200 indicators. And these indicators are exactly this. It's about giving grades to reforms, not on an arbitrary basis, but on a very, very well defined levels. Each level has a very well defined criterion to achieve that level. And we're working with the governments and the regional organizations, with the RCC also. But above all, with the governments, who then have to self-assess themselves. And we also do an independent assessment, and then we reconcile the two to make sure that we have the accurate understanding, both from the internal side, from the government, and from the outside stakeholders. And that's the result of this report. And then you might ask me, okay, so what? So what does the report tell us? So the report is about 500 pages long, but I will try to give you a few sneak highlights. What it says is that basically, you know, we all heard the symptoms were already mentioned. Here today, a loss of employment during the crisis between 2008 and 2010. We lost 10% of global employment in this region. Total employment, 10% of jobs were lost. And in the rebound after the crisis, we only regained about 2%. So it means we're today still 8% less than we had jobs in 2008. Okay. So if we had jobless growth before 2008, well, we actually had active job destruction since then. And this is a much worse result than some other Central European countries like Poland and Czech Republic and Hungary, who have regained their jobs. We have also seen a net drop in the foreign direct, not only foreign direct investment. Actually, we look at total investment and in particular greenfield investment, because that's the one which actually creates jobs, right? When you do privatization, as was already said before, very often privatization just makes jobs disappear. So greenfield investment has dropped from 13% of GDP on average before the crisis to 5% today. Okay, so very big drop of greenfield investment. Now, what are the causes? And this is what the scoring technique is telling us. Well, you know, the basics are okay. You have CEFTA, who has abolished tariffs. You still have some non-tariff barriers, which are still quite significant and which need to be worked on. Investment policy, you know, main things are okay. Foreign investors do have national treatment. They can bring their own personnel and they can mostly access land, and all these basics are relatively okay. You need to work a little bit more on investment promotion. Access to finance, there are also measures which are being done to enable entrepreneurs to access finance more easily. There are initiatives I can talk more in detail afterwards. But what is the problem? The problem is actually that we're in this typical middle income trap, okay, in the Western Balkans, that these countries are now becoming too expensive for the cheap labor kind of manufacturing. Okay, this goes further east. And so we're too expensive for the cheap labor, and we're not sophisticated enough for the higher value added. Okay, so basically we need to facilitate the transition to knowledge-based economies, and that's why we have been working with the countries in the region to establish innovation strategies and business academia, government cooperation. I have another publication to show you here. This is an example for Kosovo, business academia, government cooperation for innovation. So we're trying to help governments to set up such policy setups which will enable smart young people to stay in the countries to prevent this or at least stem a little bit the flow of the brain drain, and also to create entrepreneurial opportunities within the countries which go beyond, you know, the simple mom and pop shop. So creating innovative SMEs.
Thank you very much indeed, Anna. I was very struck listening to our panelists, how very similar the problems of the Western Balkans are to those of Europe in general. Everybody's got the problem of, first of all, how do you create jobs? How do you stimulate startups? Secondly, how do you create shared markets that make it possible for businesses to grow? How do you tackle the problem of high unemployment and labor shortages at the same time? How do you try and make sure that the people are where the jobs are, and the jobs are where the people are? And most of all, how do you fix the financial gap? How do you liberate money in a world where funds are floating around desperately looking for good bets? How do you fix all those problems? So it seems to me that our speakers have described very similar problems to those of the rest of Europe. There's one big difference. It's true, as Alan said, that the Balkan countries are falling into the middle income gap, and it's very, very worrying. But there's the big difference is at the moment the wages are very low. Incomes per head, roughly somewhere between 30% and a third of the EU average. And the EU average isn't that high since enlargement. And it's reckoned it'll take 50 years on present trends for Balkan countries to catch up. And that, to me, looks like political dynamite. I hope it isn't real dynamite, but it looks like real political trouble down the way. So I think what I'd like to do is to ask our speakers, where are the shortcuts? And I want to begin, really, with Mr. Kravchenko. Not very long ago, I happened to visit Novi Sad, the number two town in Serbia, where you're headquartered. I was very struck by the sense of progress, the sense of social cohesion. It looked to me like a town that's going somewhere. So my question to you is, what's a big company like yours doing to tap in to all that and create jobs around yourselves? I know you're going into green energy and so on. What can you, as a big company, do to encourage new startups, especially high-tech startups?
Thank you.
John.
I tried. No timer now.
No time.
No limits. No limits. Very briefly, I suppose that in our case, we have 3 P. First, this is a policy. Second is a people. And third is a place. What does it mean? Policy, we have predictability. Because what is important, that's in the beginning, 7 years ago, when we came and participated first time in the privatization of the energy company of Serbia, we have several obligations from the government side. Not just in Serbia, but when we developed in other countries, we have the same obligations. And everywhere what is important, that's we have consistency. And the other part, what's, I would say, participated in such deal, try to follow these obligations. And within these 7 years, we never mentioned that they cancel the obligation. This, I would say, prognosis, it's very important. That's why we can reinvest our profit, we can create the new jobs, and so on and so forth. For sure, very important the economical attractiveness of the policy. That's why for us very important the tax system. And I suppose comparing with the other countries in Europe, it's one of the best from the point of attractiveness. Second P, this is a people. We have rather qualified people who speaks in English, who had a good education. For sure we have invested a lot of money in universities. But now we are really satisfied by the quality of the people. And at the same time, the salary of these people is rather reasonable comparing with the Western Europe. So I think that this is a good combination, the level of qualification and the level of payment. And third, this is a place. For instance, now, today I have landed at 7 a.m. and in Brussels we had -2. When I have started at 5 a.m. from Belgrade, it was +17. So it's not so bad place to live, to develop the business, to develop such things like agriculture, infrastructure, and other things. So I'm pretty sure that if the government will focus on this 3P and the investors will help the government to invest their own money, not just in their own investment projects, but in the social infrastructure, social responsibility, long-term projects. I suppose this is the best recipe for the development. And we, together with the governments in the Western Balkan region, do so.
Thank you very much. Let's turn to you, Minister, and ask you, well, a number of things. First of all, one of the major opportunities for Montenegro looks like tourism, which is a great generator of quick jobs. So have you got a plan on that that you can suggest that other neighboring countries should be using? And secondly, we've heard quite a lot about dissatisfaction with what the European Union is or isn't doing. And I wondered if you had any thoughts on the sort of help, the sort of ideas that EU countries are using to stimulate startups that Montenegro should be copying.
Thank you. So, as you rightly mentioned, tourism is probably, I wouldn't say most important, but definitely most visible part of our economy, and I believe that is a part in which Montenegro is on, let's say, global level. We can compete globally in tourism, and just as following up about temperature today on Montenegrin seaside is 26, yes, and 15% is seaside temperature. So use all those low costs to come and to check it directly
over the
weekends, yes. Regarding, but let's say nice landscape and good weather is not is desired but not sufficient in order to develop ambient in tourism. And what we can say about what is, let's say, our experience about tourism, we just use, as I said, traditional economic receipts. We put, let's say, all socialistic settlement, touristical hotels and such things on a market. And we did the same way in tourism, in industry, in agriculture, in energy, but definitely global market recognized tourism as something what was probably more interesting and more attractive for global investor. From that point of view, in tourism today, we have probably the most prominent global players in tourism industry, which are already in Montenegro. Right now, we are trying to use it as acceleration for other industries. For example, first of all, is agriculture, because it is very closely connected. About energy, let's say we developed also very important steps in terms of, let's say, new investment and in terms of new infrastructure project. But from let's say our last 20-year experience, what we can say that we believe really that traditional economics receipts are working in terms of competitiveness, openness and protection of the private investment and such things are really providing results. When we are talking about something, what would be, if I understood your, let's say, second question about Europe's involvement in adding, let's say, more value in economic activities in our region, really I believe that something what I already mentioned is very important, this part related with infrastructure. But if you are talking about something what is going to be valuable in long term, I believe that there is only one thing which can help people on personal level, which could help nation to catch up, and it is nothing but education. And from that point of view, I really believe that already first steps are done in terms that our people are, let's say, our students, young people, traveling easy, changing faculties during the let's say those time international experience. And really, I believe from that point of view, that education is only things which can, let's say, help to overcome gaps in long run.
Thank you very much, Tanya. Slovenia was the original pin-up girl for accession for Balkan countries, and you've seen the sort of model that's been created there. When you look at the other accession countries, what are your reactions? Do you think, oh, I wish they'd do this, I wish they'd stop doing that?
Oh, certainly I would have a lot of reactions of that kind. Just now when I was listening to the minister, I was thinking of Montenegro, that's the place I like to go, especially the coast side, and I always regret why there are so many these big, massive hotels, that I very quickly escape out of it, instead of not some well-placed in the beautiful nature you have. And this is something where I regret to see along the whole coast of ex-Yugoslavia. A lot of these foreign investments that are going beyond what is still nice for the tourism. This is one thing, but okay, there are Slovenia experience. I have to say, of course, every enlargement process or every experience is different and more painful. But coming back to job opportunities and the young people, what our experience was, what we did wrong and what we are still struggling is that we created a really well-educated young generation. Everyone had to have university degree, masters, doctors, but at the end, we couldn't place them in the labor market. There was no clear connectivity between the educational system and the labor market. And this was quite a problem, especially because the young generation today have different challenges. There are not enough jobs, they need to be more creative, they need to find their opportunities either with small and medium-sized companies, startups, as you mentioned. And this is something, I think, where we can exchange a lot of experiences, a lot of knowledge, how to do it better when it comes to business opportunities. Otherwise than that, I think Montenegro, in that regard, is still the next nice example because of the size, doesn't create many problems as it's small. But I would wish to see that in our region, inside the Western Balkans, we would better cooperate and we would better trust. Instead, what I fear is that the young generation is growing into the environment of growing nationalism and lack of opportunities. And that's why I think we need to push really strongly with all the reforms, through all the political and business elites that are in the region, to bring these countries closer to the European Union. And I would mention as well my experience with business people that come from the region to me, and they come with a lot of business ideas. There are many ideas as well, how to get EU funds or other funds that are available to invest business. But often with a good idea, and when they manage to connect the same partners from the region, they don't reach far. Somewhere on the way, it stops. So the implementation, often, it's a problem from good idea to come to the end result. There I often see that it doesn't work.
Tanya, I had a follow-up question because you're the European Parliament, and in the previous session, Goran from the Regional Cooperation Council made a very good point about the gap growing between the Western Balkans and EU member states, but also the new EU member states. And if I may paraphrase what you said, Goran, I mean, it was that, you know, there should be a change in the system where aid and funding is available before a country actually joins. So there's more money coming in to sort of narrow the gap. And I was wondering if that kind of reset, if you like, a mental reset, system reset, is something you would envisage or favor.
I don't think that this question has a simple or a single answer, if I put it like that. Because I don't think that you can cut the funds to the accession countries because they are crucial to go through the reforms. But we could today discuss whether cutting the EU funds to some countries that are not following anymore the fundamentals of the EU integration. And this is actually a very sensitive and huge debate at the moment when we are following either the discussion in Hungary or in Slovakia or in Poland or the countries that are on the edge of violating the fundamentals of European project. And when you mentioned my main topic these days is migration, I'm very concerned when I see how the reaction of Visegrad countries is. Because these are the countries that newly joined, newly is not newly anymore, but they have the newest memory of what the integration brings. We were all beneficiaries of the EU money, still today. But today, these are the countries that are closing down the borders without having the arguments why doing so, without having problem with migrants or asylum seekers. And this is what is scary. And what is even more scary to me is to see that inside the EU Council, not talking even about the Western Balkan, we are having more and more isolated groups of countries that don't talk and work together anymore. So this is what I mentioned at the beginning, new reality of European Union that is changing. European Union is changing and will never be the same. But where we are heading, I think, are crucial weeks and months ahead of us. And we need Western Balkan for that, more than we believe.
Thank you very much. Anna, I'm glad I didn't know that there were 234 questions to ask when I said 1 to 5. We've been working with the OECD Investment Compact for Southeastern Europe, I think, since the beginning of this annual Balkans Conference. So my question is this. You and others have said the Western Balkans countries are slipping backwards in terms of employment, in terms of growth, in terms of inward investment. So is that the sort of freak winds of the global economy, or does it mean that they haven't been listening to your advice?
Well, let's put it like that. The world is changing. The world is changing. And even though, you know, we did see quite a few positive, reforms going in the right direction. As I mentioned, you know, in the domain of investment, trade, access to finance, things have changed to the better. There are probably two phenomena. One is the phenomenon of, the global crisis, which struck everyone relatively hard, but the Western Balkans probably harder than others, because the growth model it had before the crisis was based on spending and credit growth and so on. It was not an export based model. Today there are some, not everything is negative. Okay, so we were insisting on the negatives, but there are some positive changes. Like, for instance, if you look at exports have increased by 50%. Exports of goods have increased by 50% since 2007. So we are getting into a new... So growth is slower, but probably qualitatively better now than it was before, because it's now getting more traction from exports than from domestic consumption and credit expansion, which was previously the case. So, I think we're going through a profound change. And picking up on what the previous speakers said, I think what you asked previously, how can we shortcut, how can we accelerate the growth? Well, some things are happening already. Other things, as I mentioned, increased focus on a transition towards a knowledge-based economy, getting away from, as we said, protecting some older jobs in some old industries, which perhaps are no longer competitive and which, by the industry life cycle, are meant to not exist anymore, and rather giving the effort and the focus of the policymakers to creating new opportunities for new entrepreneurs. There are beautiful things. I just came back from a mission in Kosovo where we had this competition for triple helix partnerships between business, academia, and governments to create innovation. And they had beautiful innovations. Some which were cutting edge innovations, which would be an innovation. We don't have such services in France yet, and they're thinking about introducing that in Kosovo and so on. So all these people need to be encouraged. All these people need to be encouraged. And sometimes I make the parallel between, the world of sports. Actually, we never talk about sports in these meetings. But, sports is a domain where the Western Balkans excel. We have some of the top-notch sportsmen of the world in a global competition who are from the Western Balkans. And you could ask yourself, okay, so if we have global sportsmen, why don't we have global entrepreneurs? Or we have fewer entrepreneurs than we do sportsmen. Well, probably one of the thing is also the attitude, is also the attention they get in the media, the attention they get from the leadership, you know. Because basically, if you choose to be an entrepreneur in the Western Balkans, if you make it good, if you're successful, then there's always a doubt. You know, is this guy really respecting all the rules and laws and so on? Maybe he might have, you know, done something wrong. And if you don't succeed, then you're a loser. So it seems to be like almost a no-win perspective being an entrepreneur. Okay, so we need some positive attitude. We need to have in the media some articles saying, "Oh, look, this is an entrepreneur. He made it big. He's a hero." You know, sportsmen are always seen as heroes in the media. But not entrepreneurs, and entrepreneurs should be seen as heroes, you know, as we have the attitude in the US or whatever. You know, everybody wants to be Steve Jobs. We don't have such role models in the Western Balkans, okay? So if we could create that and say, look, these guys are heroes, these guys are creating jobs, okay? Perhaps more people would be encouraged to become entrepreneurs and less people would aspire to become civil servants.
Very good point. Yes?
Mr. Kravchenko should be a role model. You started with a bit of help from Gazprom, but you've created a lot of jobs.
I would fully support such approach. I mean, the positive approach is very, very important. So we have the policies, we have economical reasons, but if you do not have the optimism inside us through our examples, for sure it's already 80% of losses. If you ask me, I already visited much more than 100 countries, lived in different continents, in different countries, where I would like to live and work. I would answer, Balkans. If you ask my three sons, they would do the same. If you ask our international employees, we have in our top team more than 20 different countries' representatives. Majority of them say the same. So the positive approach, positive example, and personal example is very, very important. Everybody who come, for example, in our company, within 9 months, need to pass the exam. First, Balkan culture. Second, Serbian language. And if somebody will not pass the exam, he will be dismissed. And I suppose this is a combination of promotion, positive and negative, will create the special environment. And I'm pretty sure that this is a good, positive approach. Thank you.
Thank you. So a very interesting suggestion from you, entrepreneurs as heroes of the Western Balkans. I like it immediately. We're happy now to open the floor to comments and questions from you. I'll take two questions. I see two hands going up. I'm sorry, I don't have much time. So the lady here... yourself, and then our friend there.
Thank you so much.
Could you please keep your questions short so
yes.
We have time?
Yes, very short. So first of all, I would like to thank the director of Friends of Europe for bringing such a good business representative, because our nations in Balkans are spending quite a lot of money, you know, on nation branding. But coming from a business representative, especially a foreigner, is much better than, you know, consuming our taxes. But with all his good approach to do business in Balkans, I really have a question. How does he cope, or how does your company cope with corruption? When we heard like 1 hour ago, like a speculation of a figure for 100 billions of, you know, a euro is lost due to the corruption. So what do you do?
You took the question out of my mouth. Very good question. Just can you identify yourself very quickly?
Zamira Apode, Tirana business representative.
Okay.
From Tirana Chamber of Commerce to Luxembourg Chamber of Commerce.
Great. Thank you so much. There's a hand that went up just behind you. Fabio, do you see? Your hand, yeah, there, please.
Yeah. Aris Kokinos, Eurobolt.com. Mr. Kravchenko, speaking about the weaknesses and strengths of Western Balkans, you've mentioned also the word sanction. How do you see the future of the business of gas in that region, given the failure of South Stream? Do you think that would be rather like bilateral agreements rather than a big package?
Thank you very much. Gentleman over here.
Yes, thank you. This is a Greek, but I represent a European interest. My name is Kyriakos Yaloglou. I work for Eurogas. That's a European gas association. I have a very brief question. We talk about infrastructure, connectivity, and strengthening the region's ties. I just heard from Mr. Merit about the possibility of attracting new investment. In our thinking, the southeastern part of Europe, the Western Balkans, but also the east, is a major possible pathway for gas to come closer to Europe. And there is a lot of money for that, and there is a lot of opportunity. And today is the publication of the Commission's package, which the objective is to bring more gas to Europe, to diversify supply. The Eurogas position is that we need a market
really
approach on that. Yes,
yeah.
I'm coming to the
question. Come to the question, please.
Yes,
yeah.
The question is the following. How can we increase investment for the region when we are lacking in market developments? We need a market economy to make sure that the investment will come. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yes, and final question from the gentleman up here. Could you hear? Please, a plea to make it really brief so we can get panelists' reaction.
Before I'm short. Number one, what do the countries have to do of the region to tap into the potential of the diaspora? There are hundreds of thousands of people living abroad. And, of course, also please try to see the importance and the impact of the remittances coming from those countries and for the impact on the country. Second question, do you think that the, let's call it the communist ghost or the past, is the main hindrance for entrepreneurship? And that for private, industries coming up and doing the share that they have in our countries? And third question, I think I want to mention it again because education. Everybody wanted to study at universities and then have a public job in the government. Now, why did the countries not react sooner and, really invest everything into vocational education and training?
Thank you. Thank you. Very good 3 points. I'll start with you, Mr. Kravchenko, please.
On all of the questions. So corruptions, I suppose it's not our question, but in any case, we are a public company. We have the open procedures. We have 2.2 million minor shareholders, including the investment funds. And all different contracts must come through the tenders. It's much more efficient, I'm sorry for this comparison, than in government, because it's much more faster. But in any case, it's really open for the all shareholders. And if you know that by statistics, 1/3 of the people honest from the burning, from the bone. 1/3 of the people always will use the corruption. And 1/3 in the middle depends on the conditions. So in any case, in every organization, in every government, we cannot on 100% exclude such case. But we need to do all from our side to implement the most strict and most open procedures. And one of the cases, we send to the prison our top managers if we find that this is happened. About gas. Gas, it's not our specialization, but what our input is, that we developing gas reserves in our Balkan region. We call it Pannonian Basin. It's including Serbia, Bosnia, Hungary, Romania. And for instance, within the last 5 years, we have increased our gas reserves on 25%. despite of the fact that our production of gas increased as well. So currently we produce around 30% of the consumption of gas in the Serbia, and we have significant reserves. I'm pretty sure that based on the schemes what we have alternatives. Turkey, Bulgaria, Nord Stream 2. In any case, Balkan region will be covered. It's for sure. But it's not my specialization. About education question, very shortly, I'm pretty sure that you are right, that government together with business, it's very, very important, need to invest to save the best people in this region. I give you just two examples. We had a special program 5 years ago. We have identified the best Serbians who are working abroad, from Australia to Canada. And within these 5 years, we have returned 200 very well-educated people to work in our countries. Other program, how we call it, Young Specialist, we have attracted within the last 3 years 700 young specialists from the universities in the region. And if, for example, 5 years ago, the geologist, the competition for one place in geological university was one person for one place, now it's a 15 persons for one place. So I'm pretty sure if the business is interesting, and this is strategic task of the business, we need to work together, and we need to invest in long term in the universities. I have the several examples from other parts of the business in our region, but you're absolutely right that we need to work together.
Thank you very much. Alan, would you like to comment?
Yes, just briefly, on the question on the diaspora, this is a very important subject, which I think is an untapped resource for the Western Balkans, who have huge diaspora populations and are not using them. I don't refer to remittances. I mean, remittances come anyway, and I don't think that is the main value you can get from the diaspora. I think the value of the diaspora is really in this transition to the knowledge economy and creating networks with the people from diaspora. The problem is that there is no organized connectivity. Foreign universities have, in Europe and in the US and throughout the OECD countries, universities have alumni networks and people can find, you know, their colleagues 10, 20, 30 years after graduation. And if they need a contact, they can use that. And even if they didn't know the person, just the fact that you're from the same university usually opens doors. In the Western Balkans, we don't have this very, very developed. There are very few such networks, and this is underdeveloped. So people who need a contact, who need a business contact, who need a research contact and so on, have a big difficulty finding those contacts. And I think these kinds of networks should be the first step. The second step would be, you know, bringing people from diaspora to the homeland to share their expertise, their knowledge and so on. And then why not, you know, at least for the research community who has sabbatical leaves and things like that, where they have the opportunity for one year to maybe come back to their homeland and do something, and it doesn't cost very much for the homeland, stopping short of and trying to bring them all back, because all these programs of, you know, returning diaspora home, this doesn't really work. I mean, people, if they come back home, they usually come for personal reasons, but not because it's organized by the government. But you have all these intermediate steps, doing projects with them, contacting, networking, and so on, getting value out of that. For the entrepreneurship, just a short answer, you ask, is it the communist ghost? I don't think it's the communist ghost. I actually think it's more the ghost from the transition. You know, there are so many bad stories about entrepreneurs doing illegal things during the transition and so on. And whenever it hit the news about entrepreneurs, it was negative news. Okay, so I think people just, you know, there's no parent in the Western Balkans who really wishes to see his or her child become an entrepreneur, because they think it's something which is not dignified. So as I said, we need action. We need real action from the leadership in the region to say it is okay to be an entrepreneur. And actually, you know, we support entrepreneurs, and we think entrepreneurs are good for society. If they do something wrong, we will prosecute them. Right. Not
Thank
otherwise.
You. Thank you very much, Alan. I think the message is well understood and a powerful one indeed. Tanya, would you like to come in?
Just,
you promised to be brief, right?
I can just shortly add, I think everything that was said, I perfectly agree. And especially on the diaspora question, I think it's crucial because after the Second World War, after the Balkan War, 70,000 and more people came to Slovenia. Mm. What is crucial to add on the top of what you said is that we preserve freedom of movement together with the freedom of capital, because this is where diaspora greatly contributes to the GDP of our countries or home countries, and in all other ways as well to the development of the countries. So that is the joint effort. And just a short remark on what you said on the training and educational system. This is exactly what I wanted to mention before, where we made a mistake. We developed a highly educated generation, but we forgot professional skills, we forgot about the trainings, and this is something where it's necessary to invest more to really get young people to the jobs. Not only education to the masters, doctors, and high universities, but those skills and professions that are highly necessary in our societies, and actually where we are quite strong in the region as well.
Mm. Thank you very much. Mr. Kavaric.
Thank you. Just let's say as a reminder, because we have highlights in last several questions, market economy, entrepreneurship, vocational training, and really I believe it is addressing all issues which are, let's say, probably crucial issues, not just in today's world, but also in transition processes for last 20 years. We spoke about market economy, and really I believe what is very important that all of us remind ourselves about market economy cornerstones, and those things are, let's say, well known, and I believe that we should, let's say, reiterate it on Western Balkan, but also I believe it could be useful for the Western countries also to remind what is foundation of their, let's say, well-being for last centuries. And when we talk about market economy, and later on we have such a questions which emerge related with education, with comeback of the people which are, let's say, from Balkan countries right now all over the world. Really, I believe everything, all those, and education also, I really believe that all those things are very, very well connected with business opportunities. Someone mentioned today that probably dream, let's say, European or Balkan version of American dream is to give faculty and later on job on a government. Really, 7-10 years ago in Montenegro, it wasn't the case when we have, let's say, everything flourishing, booming before the time of the crisis, and no one was interested to work on that time for the government. Really, I believe that is right now all just matter of the opportunities, business opportunities. Business opportunities are related with the market ambient, with the precondition for growth, and when there is business opportunity will create jobs, and that is always very, very well connected with education. If you're talking about coming back of our people from outside, situation is, I believe it is also idea about global market and, let's say, free flow of people. Right now we have a lot of people outside, but also a lot of foreigners in our countries, and I believe that is idea, basic idea of, let's say, United Europe. And all of those things are related with opportunities, business opportunities, opportunities for education, opportunities to travel. And from that point of view, I think that we should focus on removing barriers and making preconditions for let's say, private initiative in every field of human activities. And really, I believe that all those things are very well connected with education of the people, which are going to face opportunities which should emerge from such ambient. Thank you.
Minister. Mr. Panelists, thank you very much indeed for, I think, a really stimulating end to a conference I found fascinating. I have to inform you that you're fortunate in one respect, that there isn't enough time for me to have... what I planned to do was to propose an optimism-pessimism index for the next year, but you're spared from that. But I will maybe come back to that next year. Right now, I'd like to thank everybody for, I think, a really useful conference. I think we've taken a snapshot of a lot of optimistic things as well as worrying things. Let's see where we are in a year's time. Let's cross our fingers that the migrant refugee crisis is not going to exacerbate an already tricky situation. Let's cross our fingers that the accession process, despite the 2019 standstill, is going to keep moving ahead and that we're not going to lose momentum. And I'd like to close not only by thanking everybody who found the time to come here today, but also to thank the Konrad Adenauer Stiftung and particularly its director, Stefan Gerold. We've been working together on this crisis since this conference. Since, yes, the little Freudian slip. since its inception. And a large part of the credit goes to Stefan himself, who before coming to head the Brussels office was stationed in Zagreb and was very much at the coal face. And a lot of the credit for this whole series of conferences belongs with Stefan, with his colleagues, with Friends of Europe's team, and especially Sharda. So thank you all very much indeed.